The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hello, my Green listeners and friends out there. I want to welcome you to the Green Front. I have another exciting show planned for you. Going to get right to it. I have three great guests lined up. Going to begin with Joseph Rome, who is the ultimate climate blogger. He's always on top of news events. My training, for those of you who are new to the show, is in radio news. For 25 years, I covered breaking news. So I like to get the very latest, especially when it's not only hot off the press, so to speak, but it is very important news. And, of course, today, Wednesday, March 30th, President Obama just gave a big energy speech, and I wanted to get some reaction to it. No one better than Joseph Rome, who always has the climate in mind. If the president doesn't have climate at the top of his lips, he did mention it, I think, once, climate change, in his speech. I was trying to monitor it, but television coverage of such important news is not always easy to get, but I'm sure Joseph Rome has all the information. Want to get his sense of what the president said. I know there's a lot of talk about oil drilling and lots of giveaways for nuclear energy, even in the wake of this perfect storm of a disaster, of course, still unfolding in Japan. Second, we're going to be joined by Senator Joe Simidian from California. He has sponsored a bill that has just been approved and is now headed to the desk of Governor Brown. Jerry Brown being a very green governor, so I bet he will sign it. And that would mandate that California get 33%, that's a full third, of its energy from renewable sources by the year 2020. So that is very encouraging news. And also we're going to talk about what's going on in Germany, where they are going to show the world apparently how to ramp down their nuclear energy plants because they are so concerned about what's happened in Japan. And, of course, that means they need to ramp up renewable energy. And in our second half, we'll be chatting with a longtime friend of mine, Bill Shireman. He has been heading a group called Future 500, working with businesses in America to green their practices and some even in Japan, so he'll have a bit of a perspective on what's going on with his Japanese counterparts as well. But now, without further ado, I want to welcome Joe Rome of Climate Progress to the Green Front. Hey, Joe.
Howdy.
Thanks so much for being on top of it, as always.
Oh, my
pleasure. You getting a drink out because our president did mention it at least once, it being climate change?
He did. He actually mentioned it 2.5 times.
2.5 drinks coming up.
So actually I had said that if he mentioned it that often, then it was a weekend in Vegas with Charlie Sheen.
Yeah, well, you know, at least I've been saying, and there's no joking matter anywhere in the Japanese crisis, but at least it did knock Charlie Sheen off the front pages and the nightly programs.
Yes, it didn't seem to knock the president off of his continued desire to say that he's a big fan of nuclear power.
Good segue, Joe. What did you hear today?
Well, you know, the president has fundamentally decided that he is going to make the focus energy security and not climate change. He did his big push on how we're going to cut oil imports one-third by 2025. As I point out on Climate Progress, we're actually already halfway there because of the big recession and because of the higher prices for oil in the last few years. We and a little more domestic production, imports are actually down almost over 15% in the last 2 years.
Is that because of the recession in part, Joe?
It is partly due to the recession. It's partly, actually, interestingly, a trend that is happening in all major industrialized countries, which is peak oil demand. There's just, you can't put less than one person in a car, and the congestion is so bad that that people are actually starting to use a little less oil particularly at these prices of $3 and $4 a gallon. The president has decided he's going to embrace drilling for oil and gas, so that's what he led with. At least he explained that because we use 25% of the world's oil but only have 2% of the world's reserves, that can't possibly be a long-term solution. But he just can't bring himself to say that aggressively spending money to burn more fossil fuels is counterproductive. He won't say that. He's pushing other good stuff. He pushes the fuel economy standards, which he's obviously been a leader on, and no one can fault him for that, for what he's done there.
Although you did point out that he forgot to fault who is responsible primarily for us not having better CAFE standards.
Yeah, that's the most annoying thing. You know, he is not a confrontation guy, if that wasn't obvious before. He really believes this bipartisan stuff. You know, he's like Charlie Brown, and the Republicans are like Lucy with the football. And, you know, I just think that, he said, he went off his prepared remarks to say that we haven't had fuel economy increases in 30 years. But he didn't explain the main reason was Republicans. He said in his speech, quote, some want to cut these critical investments in clean energy. They want to cut our research and development into new technologies. Well, the only people who are so extreme that they won't even support research and development into solar and wind are conservative Republicans. But he doesn't mention that. So the public just thinks Washington is broken, it's everyone's fault. And, you know, if you can't, I mean, one has to be clear here. The environmental movement has a lot of positive support, but it doesn't scare anybody. It doesn't win votes the way that the NRA or the AARP win votes, because everyone knows if you oppose them, there's no penalty. And if the President of the United States can't exact a political penalty for Republicans who want to cut the budget for solar and wind and who want to block efforts to cut pollution, if he can't extract a political penalty, they're just going to keep taking their money from big oil and from the Kochs and the big corporate polluters and keep doing what they're doing.
And what do you say about nuclear energy? I would imagine there's a lot of attention being paid to that.
Yeah, he said that, you know, it's important, if it can be done safely, it's important to keep doing it.
Yes.
You know, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you enjoy the play? Safety is a very big issue. I mean, cost is the big issue, and he never mentions that. The reason people aren't building new nukes in this country is because they're so damn expensive.
So in the wake, I mean, just in the last year alone, Joe, recall that we had the coal mine explosion killing, I think, some 24 miners. You know, a lot of people forgot about that because we had the BP kill right after that, which, you know, stretched through the summer. And then we had Japan. So, and yet it's starting to sound a lot like business as usual in just a matter of weeks since we had the earthquake in Japan followed by the tsunami and the nuclear reactor partial meltdown.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very weird situation. Yeah, I mean, he gave the president's speech after the BP oil spill is considered one of the worst of his career.
I remember
this
that.
Speech, I think, is kind of lame in the sense that he keeps making the same. He gives a version of the speech he's given many times. He's given a lot of speeches in support of clean energy. But the problem is there's no bite. Here are the people who are blocking clean energy. The American public want clean energy. Every poll shows that across the board. Even Republicans want clean energy, and independents and progressives desperately want clean energy. But there is one group of people who have for decades been blocking it. And if you can't even tell the public who it is, then why are things going to change? So it's just kind of a disappointing and pointless speech in many regards, because he can't achieve these policy proposals. His administration is in the process of sort of not even participating very much in the budget negotiations, which are going to result in deep budget cuts. And I don't think he can stop the budget cuts in clean energy unless he, I mean, if he went on the air and said, you know, conservatives and Tea Party extremists are trying to destroy our leadership in solar and wind, then he might be able to accomplish something. But just to go out to Georgetown and give a speech, it's not going to achieve anything.
In the meantime, we see that Germany is really moving to reduce any commitment to new nuclear power plants specifically in light of the Japanese disaster. They get about 23% of their energy from nuclear power. I guess that's about as much as we get here in the United States. But they're really going to be scaling up their renewable energy sources, and yet they have a lot less wind and solar power than we do here, at least in California, a lot of wind power in the middle of this country. So they're going to show us how to get it done. Once again, we're going to be left in the wake here. Is this a golden green opportunity for President Obama to say, in light of this triple, you know, hit, this perfect storm of coal, oil, nuclear disaster, we need to acknowledge that worst-case scenarios happen. There's human error. And, one has to wonder, what will it take to really get the shift that's needed?
Yeah, it is certainly true I just posted on Climate Progress that a major analysis came out that in 2010, we actually fell into third place in the race for clean energy. China passed us back in 2009 in total investment in clean energy. But this year, in 2010, Germany passed us, and now we're in third place. And we invented the modern solar cell, and we helped create the modern wind industry, and we are now bit players. And I don't know exactly what it's going to take. It baffles me why the president won't be just much, much blunter here, but he's just not the kind of guy that he is. And, of course, Republicans are just beating him up over and over again, blaming him for the high oil prices, laughably saying that events in the Middle East have had nothing to do with the high oil prices. But that's the thing. The other side, they just blame Obama for everything and make crap up. And Obama feels that he can't say one negative thing about the Republicans on the energy front, apparently, because he didn't say it in this big speech.
Well, and didn't we learn with how much bandwidth and time and energy did the health care, you know, legislation take? Didn't he learn that you can't hold a carrot out to these people? No matter what he does or doesn't do, he's going to get slammed.
Yeah, he didn't learn that lesson. I think a lot of other people learned that lesson, but he continues to believe that he's got to, you know, try to be above the fray, and that supposedly is what will appeal to independents.
If rational minds were prevailing, that would be the case, and that should be the case. And at a time when we have so many crises, just energy, ecological for starters, not to mention the, you know, unrest in the Middle East and so many other global challenges we have, it would dictate a time to come together, and in fact we're seeing the opposite, continued political polarization. It's pretty disturbing, isn't it?
It is. Well, and it's, you know, it's mostly unique to this country. I mean, this extreme anti-science, I mean, there are corporations that have influence in other countries, but it's only in this country that one political party has been captured by the corporate polluters to the point where you have to swear that you do not believe in science in order to run for president. There was just this big post that I did on Climate Progress in which Tim Pawlenty said that people shouldn't criticize him for flip-flopping on climate change because every single other presidential candidate has done the same exact flip-flop. It is an embarrassment, and you know, we could afford the president's I'm okay, you're okay approach if the situation weren't so dire. But we, as you know, we've ignored scientists for over 20 years now, telling us we needed to take action on reducing heat-trapping greenhouse gases.
And anyone who's proud of the fact that they flip-flopped on climate change, you know, come back in 10 years, how smart are they going to look? You know, flip-flopping on science, you know, 97% of world scientists saying we have a major problem here. It's surreal. And yet, this is what we're facing. So we're going to have State Senator Joe Simitian joining us in just a couple of minutes. You might want to stay on, Joe, since he is the one who championed this groundbreaking legislation that looks like it probably will pass, and that, of course, is the bill that would make California get 33% of our energy from renewable sources. And I bet he doesn't include nuclear in that, but we're going to find out for sure in just a couple of minutes. In the meantime, I just wanted to get your sense of the Japanese disaster. I haven't spoken to you since it happened on March 11th because it was worst-case scenario and because it was, you know, a monster quake followed by, you know, devastating tsunami followed by nuclear, you know, playbook going out the window because of these preceding catastrophes and then worst-case scenario again, especially the spent fuel rods being right there on top of the plant. How are you feeling about nuclear right about now?
Well, I've been saying for a long time that nuclear has kind of priced itself out of the marketplace, and there really aren't any market-based economies that are building nuclear plants because they're like $8, $9, $10 billion a piece now. Now, you know, the industry has been saying, oh, well, you need to, it would be so much cheaper if we could just speed up the permitting process. And, you know, these things are safe. We don't need to keep paying so much attention to oversight. And I think the Japanese, you know, have shown that, in fact, we have to pay a lot more attention to safety and oversight. The Japanese disaster, it is obviously a great, great tragedy. But the point is, worst case scenarios happen. And the Japanese didn't plan for it, and we don't. Many of our reactors are near fault lines, are in flood zones. In fact, the Center American Progress, Climate Progress, is going to post a piece in the next 24 hours that lay out a map of where our 104 nuclear reactors are compared to the flood zones. So, you know, these are serious problems because when things go wrong, they go catastrophically wrong. And Japan just acknowledged today that of the six reactors, they have lost four of them permanently. I mean, they are going to be useless. And as you know, it looks like one of them, the core has been breached. Whether it's a partial or full meltdown, it's hard to tell at this point. But according to the new scientist, some radioactive levels are reaching Chernobyl levels. So it is, you know, it is a serious thing to have a nuclear accident, and we need to, and in this country we have this law that says if there is a nuclear accident, the American taxpayers are on the hook. And as you know, we also have these loan guarantees where the American taxpayer covers 80% of the risk of the loan. So we are covering the risk of building the plant, and if there's if the plant doesn't get built, we are liable for 80% of the cost, and if there's an accident, we suffer the environmental harm, and then we have to pay for it.
Isn't one of the lessons here, Joe, that we, you know, we really have to look, you know, so urgently at all of that? That was an isolated incident. We've just seen more of them. We certainly know the environmental impacts of coal-fired power plants, you know, spewing CO2 into the atmosphere, contributing to climate change as one source. We certainly saw what happened when we go ever farther out into the ocean to, you know, drill for oil, and now, of course, the nuclear meltdown. It would seem that this would be a good time to be in the solar and wind industry. Do you think we are going to see what apparently they're going to start doing in Germany and maybe here in California, a real ramp-up of those two sources? And also, not to mention, you know, the gas prices here in the Bay Area, $4.50 on average right now. I just got back from being away for 5 days, and it went up quite a bit. So, you know, is this going to at least, is the silver lining or the green lining, if you will, all of this together, will it force Americans to pay more attention and maybe even leadership in Washington to, you know, where we get our energy from and what we're going to do as population and consumption continues to grow while our options seem to be more limited, or at least we're aware of the dark side, the downside of some of the sources that we've been, you know, talking about and using and look, talking about investing more and talking specifically about nuclear, oil, and coal?
Well, look, the good news is if you care about clean energy, there is a massive amount of spending globally, and it has it is continue to go up at a very high rate. The bad news is most of the increases have been in China and Europe and Asia. So advances continue in solar has continued to come down in cost, and wind has continued to make advances. And as you say, some of the states, particularly California, have maintained their leadership. The big question is Obama going to fight for clean energy, or is he going to let this, you know, austerity budget crunch out all of our promise on innovation?
And don't we need leadership at the top nationally from the Obama administration to really send signals to the renewable energy, you know, companies that are trying to get, you know, funding to ramp up, start up solar, wind, geothermal, if that's a viable option in your view? These things just can't happen overnight. There needs to be consistency. And wouldn't it be good to have a national policy that is, very justified right about now?
No question about it. I mean, you know, the irony is Obama lays out other than the call for more drilling, most of his policies are a pretty good idea. The problem is he is just ineffectual at this point at getting them into place. The only way you're going to get into place is if you were to do really a very aggressive campaign. He gives a big speech on Libya for the networks to cover, but I mean, he has to lay out to the public in a major Oval Office speech what the stakes are on oil and climate.
Now, I can't let you go without talking about, hopefully you can stay on while we have some comments from Senator Simidian in just a moment, but this, you know, attack on the EPA. That's another big story that's getting a little bit sidelined because of the Japanese crisis. But, again, let's file that in the surreal category in light of what's going on globally.
No, it's unbelievable. There's going to be three votes today in the Senate on different, potential amendments that are attempting to strip the EPA's ability to use the Clean Air Act to reduce carbon dioxide pollution. And this is just the first battle, and no one should think it's going to end there. Many Republicans like Newt Gingrich want to shut the EPA down. They are trying to defund the EPA, stop it from doing reducing air pollution. On Climate Progress, if people want to, you know, contact their member of Congress, I have a link to how they can do that. But it is just unbelievable. Yeah, we had the hottest year on record last year, and these droughts and wildfires and floods, and people don't want to, and Republican House wants to stop the EPA from regulating pollution.
Daily.
Okay, Joseph Rome, we have Joseph Simidian on the line. Do you want to stay on for a second, Joe, and congratulate the state senator for this passage of this legislation yesterday? Can you stay with us a few more minutes?
I could. It's a little hard just for a few minutes.
Okay, great. I just want to welcome Joe Simidian to the Green Front.
Betsy,
Senator,
nice to be with you.
So
it's been a long time. How are you?
It has. I've been covering the Green Front ever since I last saw you, which was about a decade ago, and I'm glad you have hardly given up on the cause and are still a champion, and congratulations first on your bill being passed that would require California to get about a third of its energy from renewable sources. Very exciting, and I believe it is headed for the governor's desk, and given we know Jerry Brown has a very green track record here in California, you must be feeling hopeful today.
I'm both hopeful and optimistic. I think both on the environmental front and on the economic development front, the bill is entirely consistent with Governor Brown's message to date. So no guarantees, but I think we have every reason to be optimistic.
And you just came in. I was interviewing Joseph Rome, who has, of course, the Uber climate blog, the best in the world, Climate Progress, and he has the story of this exciting development on his blog today. So I just wanted to get you two together, Joe and Joe, two green guys.
Pleasure to meet
you.
Doing
great work out there.
Congratulations. I did do a post on it. Obviously, California remains one of the bright lights in this area in fighting back Prop 23 and with the governor and with your work in getting the leadership on renewable energy.
Well, thanks. I think the conversation you all were just having about the importance of diversity in our energy supply is one of the issues that goes unnoticed, frankly. Yes, renewables make sense in terms of clean air. Yes, renewables make sense in terms of climate change issues, but entirely apart from those issues, I tell my colleagues, look, if you don't care a whit about the environment, you ought to care about the value of renewable energy as a way to diversify our energy supplies here in California. I was a brand new member of the legislature in 2001 when we had the energy crisis and saw firsthand the kind of market manipulation that is possible if you don't diversify your supply. So I see this not just as an environmental issue, but as a, from a standpoint of energy policy, you want to be in a position where you don't have all of your energy eggs in one basket. You've got the ability to diversify your supply and protect yourself from folks who otherwise are able to manipulate the market and effectively say stick them up, which is what happened to us a decade ago.
And, Senator, does this legislation say anything in particular about nuclear power as a source?
It does not. There's a definition, an existing definition in law that identifies what does and does not constitute renewable energy. And you've mentioned, a number of the most viable options right now in terms of wind and solar and biomass and geothermal. All of these are part of the long list, but nuclear is clearly not in that category. And as you pointed out earlier, Betsy, whether you're worried about the risks attendant with nuclear, at least as we now know nuclear to be, and or the consequences from an environmental standpoint of coal, the solution is to have the diversity in supply that gives you other options. Makes sense from a safety standpoint, makes sense from an environmental standpoint, but again, just makes sense from an economic standpoint if you're trying to prevent yourself from being held hostage to the kind of price spikes we've seen in the past. That's a smart way to go.
And Senator, why is it so important that the market, the clean tech, renewable, especially solar and wind power companies, get a very definite message that the market needs to know what to plan for?
Yeah, and it's interesting. This measure we had hoped to put across Governor Schwarzenegger's desk last year, and just ran out of time at the end of our 2-year session, with minutes left to go on the clock before the session ended at midnight on the last day of a 2-year session. And the reaction in the marketplace was immediate. People said, look, we still don't have a clear sense of where California is headed on renewables. And for folks who are being asked to invest billions in renewable energy projects here in California, that kind of certainty is key. So if we send the clear message that California is serious about 33% by 2020, then the investment dollars, the tax revenues, and the jobs head to California. If we don't send that message, then those investment dollars, those tax revenues, and those jobs go to some other state or some other nation. So, if we're fortunate enough to get a signature from the governor here in the next couple of weeks, then we can look forward to a decade of building on the success we've seen in the last few years in terms of developing a green energy economy here in California. And it's real, it's tangible, it's tax revenues into the state treasury, and it's jobs for people who are quite desperate to have them right now.
And does California have the clout we like to think we have here to really bring the rest of the nation along if the governor, in fact, signs it? And he has indicated support for this goal of 33%.
Yeah. No, I think, it's perhaps overused, but California is the 8th largest economy in the world. So that fact alone makes what happens in California important in terms of establishing market trends. And frankly, from a political standpoint, in sending the message to Washington that not only can this be done, it's being done, and that others can do what we're doing here in California. We've got a lot of struggles right now in California, and there are days when I feel like we don't have a lot to brag on, quite frankly. But this is an area where we've seen one of the few bright spots in terms of economic growth and development over the last few years. I think if we can get the bill signed, and I'm hopeful that we will, we'll see even greater growth and development in this area over the next decade. But it sends not just a signal to the market, it sends a signal to the political world that this is not only doable, it's being done, and that other states and hopefully eventually the nation can follow suit.
Senator Joseph Midian, I thank you for your time. Any parting thoughts before we give Joe Rome a chance to say something, and then we have to go to the break and be back with our next guest. But
we're kind of
at a crossroads, are we not? Critical moment here in our energy history and future.
We really are, and I think, this is a clean air bill. It's a climate change bill. It's a market protection bill for consumers. It's frankly a foreign policy bill, because whatever your views about American foreign policy are, I think most of us can agree that American foreign policy ought to be based on American interests and values and not on America's energy needs. And then finally, as I say, it's an economic development and jobs bill as well. I think there's a lot of good that could come from taking this next leap forward, and I'm hopeful and optimistic we're going to take that leap and that a decade from back and say this was a good thing, and we're glad California led the way.
Senator Simidian, thank you so much for the good. No, make that great work you're doing. Carry on. We need your voice. And Joseph Rome doing fabulous work every day with climate progress, the ultimate first and last word on climate progress or lack thereof. Joe, thanks for joining us as well. Any parting thoughts?
Well, I just, you know, I greatly appreciate that California, you know, is providing leadership when the federal government isn't.
Thank you. I don't know if we just lost Joe or
no,
what happened. Okay, continue that thought. You just dropped out for a second.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I think that look, this is going to be the biggest job-creating sector of the next few decades. The entire world is going to make the transition to low-carbon energy, solar, wind, electric cars, you know, electric drive vehicles. And at least California is going to ensure that some of the jobs are created in this country. We need a national level effort. The Republicans are dead set against it. The Tea Party, you know, funded by the Kochs, Charles and David Koch, are you know, trying to kill the Clean Air Act and gut clean energy research and development. But it's incumbent on everybody to just try to press as hard as can to hold accountability to the people who are for pollution and against clean energy.
Joe, great job. Go have yourself a climate-tini.
All righty.
A green drink. And we'll look forward to your next post. Climate Progress, if you don't know about it, you must. climateprogress.org. Joseph Rome is an expert. He's written several books. You probably know where to find him, but again, climateprogress.org. And we'll be back in just a moment with another champion of the green movement. That is Bill Shireman. So you're listening to The Green Front. I'm Betsy Rosenberg. Happy to bring you the latest green news and views we can find.
Get that bridge.